Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of We Speak Dispatch. We have got Doug with us today, and I'm going to have him introduce himself in just a minute because I want to tell you that we brought Doug on because we are bringing him back from an agency that is doing work remotely from home, one of our most popular episodes recently. Doug's the deputy director from the agency. We reached back out to him. We said, come tell us a little bit more about this topic because everybody had so many questions and some comments, and we're going to dive into that. But first, Doug, how are you doing in Tennessee?
Good. I'm the other Doug. I'm not the Doug that's doing the remote stuff. Well, I am kind of
like Doug.
Remote,
Doug.
Everything's great in Tennessee. Y'all.
Okay, good. Y'all. And what state are you in right now, and how are you doing?
Right. At the moment, I'm in California.
All right, good.
And in about an hour?
Hours, I'll be in Utah.
And Doug from Virginia, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So thanks for having me on this show. And yes, I'm Doug Campbell, the deputy director for the city of Alexandria, Virginia. Been there about 10 years, been in the business for going on 41 years. Oh. But so we've seen a lot of changes, right, in the public safety field for that long.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
So, and that's where I've been for the last 10 years.
Awesome. Well, previously, Doug, we had one of your employees by the name of Danny that came on and talked about this working remotely from home. So why don't you tell us, when did your agency implement this and how did you come about doing so?
So this started early on when the pandemic first came about, right? So I can remember back in January, I believe, of 20, that, you know, that's when it started to make the news, the pandemic now, the virus itself started to make the news. And so we were kind of closely watching it, but not that we thought it was going to come over and really turn into a pandemic. So in any event, we saw it starting to migrate from the West Coast slowly over to the East Coast. And then, of course, we all know what happened from there. So, but at that point, we figured, you know, we need to at least have a plan B in place, because if this is as bad as what people are saying, and it's that contagious, we're going to need to keep our people safe and as separated as possible. So we just happened to switch over to a new phone system, a new 911 telephony system that we share with Arlington County, our neighbors. But with what came with that was some remote call taking equipment that we had put on a shelf. We never thought we were going to use that. So about 3 months into the pandemic, it obviously was at that time becoming, you know, hysterical throughout the country. So we decided we needed to make a move. So we pulled that equipment off the shelf and we started testing it. What can we use this to actually send people home and answer calls from home? That's how it came about. There was a lot of behind the scenes, right? We wanted to make sure we had to fully vet this, at least to the best of our knowledge, because this is new to everybody. It forced us into something we never thought we'd ever do in this industry. But after vetting it and feeling semi, and I will say semi comfortable, you know, with the non-emergency side, as we sent people home to answer only non-emergency calls at that point in time, once we felt comfortable that we were able to harness that 911 side, in other words, we were comfortable with what happens if a call got dropped, you know, audio recordings, all of those things, just like in the center, they had to function at home as well, right? Mm-hmm. So, and again, the biggest thing there was connectivity. Everything's wireless. You have your MiFi, Wi-Fi hotspots. So you had to have, if you didn't have good connectivity, we could not, obviously, and I say in good faith, use that equipment out there because we knew it wasn't 100%. Now, obviously, nothing's 100%, but we can get it at least to that 90, close to the 5.9s. You know, that's the goal.
Yeah.
But was the people paying for their own internet at their house?
No, what we did early on was we secured, I think, four or five MiFi hotspots that were from AT&T. But prior to that, we had a different carrier. And so that was the original carrier, not AT&T at that point in time. So what we were doing is we took those and we tested them, of course, in our center first, and had people actually in our conference room with all this equipment set up, actually answering calls in the conference room. We're thinking, hey, if it works here, we're just extending it out of the building to another location, right? So it worked fine, but we noticed there was some connectivity issues in some locations because, you know, it can be spotty.
Sure.
Yeah. So we reached out to AT&T as well. And FirstNet, and that's where I'm going with that, is the FirstNet side, because we also realized that we needed to have that preemption where if all the circuits became busy from a normal user, that public safety still had access to the system. So that was kind of huge for us, and still is, obviously. That's a priority. So that's how we migrated.
Yeah, if I go with the yes, no type questions here, just yes or no. Are you guys currently doing non-emergency calls from home?
Yes.
Are you doing 911 calls from home?
Yes.
Oh, are you using NCIC remotely, securely with dual factor authentication or anything like that?
At this point, no.
Okay. And you obviously have CAD at home to enter calls for service, right?
Yes.
What about the radio? Do you have any radios at home?
Yes, we have two.
Wow.
No way. You're dispatching on the radio from somebody's house.
We just implemented that, and we are doing that now as we speak. And you mentioned the CJIS portion of
that's amazing.
The NCIC, we are now, right now as I speak, we're in a collaborative effort with our Virginia State Police, who regulate the CJIS within the state.
Yeah.
And we're going to soon be able to be the test pilot to actually fully use CJIS away from, you know, in another secured area, which would be
that
person's home. So yes.
So are you planning on never having people come back to the center? Is that the main goal? Like in the future, there will be nobody here. It'll just be.
That's what it would look like. Yes. Wow. That's what it would look like. So yes. Yeah.
How do you handle discipline problems? I mean, you got to go to their house and knock on the door and be like, hey, Jimmy, come out here.
Right. So, you know, early on when we first started, we just pushed it out and we didn't even have a policy in place. Right. Oh, we just said, here's the equipment. We need you to be safe. Go home. The only thing we told them, the only caveat was you're going to be at home and you're just going to be an extension of the center. So you're going to follow every rule and regulation, just as you would if you were on the floor in the center. So if you get up to take a break, you're letting the supervisor know. If it's your turn for lunch, you're letting the super, if you have a question. So, but you know, that was just pretty quick, fast, and in a hurry to get that out there. As we move along, this is fluid. We learn new things as we go. So we've created an SOP, and we're right now, as we speak, we're in the process of, I want to say, updating that for other things that we've realized we need to add into that SOP, you know, safety and security, IT problems. What happens if they go out of service at their house, but they're part of the shift? Do they come in? How do we manage all of that, right? What's that going to look like? So that's a huge part of it, getting this SOP in place. But for the most part, knock on wood, we've been pretty successful without an official policy, which we have now, obviously.
So you're in California. Glenn is either in California or Utah or in between the two states. All right. Could Glenna work for you right now if she was trained on your stuff from where she's at?
She absolutely could.
Oh my God.
And
where do I apply?
Yeah, right. So that is in the future coming. I will say, I don't want to speak too far out of turn as we have some things in the process right now, but we're going to go far reaching. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
And we're going to try that and vet it and see how that works.
Oh my gosh.
I want to do one more yes, no section with you. Okay. All right, here we go. Has it decreased the number of people that call in sick?
Yes.
If you have FMLA, do you think it's decreased that? If you can, speak to that. If you can't, that's fine too.
I would say FMLA is a little bit, obviously a little bit different. You know, that's more of an extended leave type thing. But to be honest, I don't, you know, probably I could say at minimum, I haven't seen as many cross my desk as I have in the last few years since we've been going remote. So,
okay, what about signing up for overtime?
Oh yeah. Oh, that's
good. Absolutely. That's you know, we got folks that you know, as long as they know they do not have to come in, they will sign up and just work from home. And we have that now. We have one person doing that every day.
Wow. And then the last question is mandatory overtime. Have you had decreased the amount of overtime that you have to mandatory, like you're getting more people to sign up for it because they can work from home, so you're mandatory less?
And I can say now we've brought in a whole bunch more, I say, part-timers in the last few months. That will be remote only call takers, and we've put a couple in place, and we've already seen the decline on the graph.
Oh, wow, that's great. Last question I got before
I turn it over to Doug and Glenna, has this turned into a recruiting tool for you guys?
And so that's where we're going now with that. We need to change some verbiage in our applications, our recruitment ads, and all of those to say, and I believe some are doing it now, others that are doing this are putting that in there saying, would you like to work from home? This, you know, these kind of things. So throwing that incentive in there, so to speak. So we want to be able to use that as well. So say, hey, look, you have the opportunity to work from home.
I'm just so fascinated by the topic. I could keep going and going on these questions. One more question. Is it viewed as a benefit? Do you have to qualify to work from home, like have certain criteria in the center to be a good employee? And you got to be meeting the standards of maybe EMD or something along those lines before you can work from home. Is it a benefit, or is it anybody's eligible?
No, it's actually an eligibility. So you need to be eligible. Okay. And you mentioned that several of those, you know, you need to be fully qualified as a call taker, which includes EMD, EFD, EPD, things. Wow. And you have to be on, you know, you have to be with us for a year and have to at least have one in that year that your performance evaluation needs to be at least satisfactory or above. And then we move you on. You know, we've got to have something in place to encourage them. Right. So
yeah,
we're getting now more and more requests for people to work from home.
Wow.
Oh, I bet.
Wow.
How has it been with morale in the center? I mean, I guess that's a little
hard morale. There's nobody there.
but you still communicate with your telecommunicators. Yeah. That was pretty good. So I'm assuming morale's like through the roof. But tell me if you've seen a difference.
You know, it's. I would say it's improved, but at the same time, you know, we're still working out some bugs, and one of those bugs is, and we tell anyone that looks into doing this program is that, how do you actually establish that real-time communications between the call taker that's wherever and the dispatcher or anyone on the floor? Because you know, and I know, if we're all in the same room and I'm the dispatcher and I have a question for the call taker, I could just stand up, turn around and say, hey, what was the description of that person, right? So now there's a little delay in that. So because, you know, we have to do something. So whether it's an open Teams chat meeting, is it an open line just on a cellular phone? We have those options and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we have the direct line. I think the most part, our folks use CAD messaging. I can send a message, you know, from my CAD to your CAD and say, hey, look, this is the only, again, there's some drawbacks to that, because if I'm busy dispatching, I may not see the CAD message, you know, right away.
Yeah.
So we, this is still work in progress, and we're still trying to figure out, where we can find that sweet spot to say, hey, look, it's just like if you were in the center. So you can't say it is 100%, but we're working on other ways to make it that way.
Oh, wow, that's just awesome.
So the people's morale in your center has went up, and you kind of talked about it. There is this delay. So what is the other responders, fire, law enforcement, EMS, what's their reaction to this delay? And what do they think of you working from home?
So for, I'll hit the fire and EMS side first. For them, it's pretty transparent and seamless. And I say that because there's not much of, because the EMD really covers that before that call's even dispatched, right? As it goes out, you're gathering most of all the information they could ever ask. There might be a time when they say, hey, can you call the number back, or can you do this? But more on the police side, when they're asking for a request, you know, running a person, running a tag, can you call can you call the complainant back and get a better description? Mm-hmm. Can you, so what happens there is, and the on the law enforcement side, they notice that little bit of delay there, and they're working with us, they're patient with that. And, you know, some of our folks are fast typers. They can get it and put it right in the notes, and they can see it on their mobile data computer, right in the vehicle. But, again, those are things that we're just working through to make it so it is real time, and that is not noticeable. So that's where we are, really.
I got a couple of questions, though. So when somebody's working from home, and let's say they've got three little tiny children, and they've got to go and feed them and take care of them and change their diapers and all that stuff, how does that impact somebody supposed to be sitting at a console working when they're like, oh, I'm going to go feed my kids, be right back? I mean, do they have to tell you?
Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But that's a good question. We when they apply after they've been on a year, and that's part of that eligibility.
Yeah.
There's certain criteria that has to be met prior to us even granting them to take the equipment home. And I'll give an example would be someone that's at home with three little ones, and they're the sole caretaker there.
Yeah.
We would not grant that.
Okay.
Because that could be a liability in the fact that we know it, and it's no fault of the person's. But if someone were to happen to a young one while they're in the middle of taking a call, natural instinct is you're going to run to the and help your family.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the criteria in our screening when we're doing that before we get to pushing the equipment out or, you know, deploying it to an individual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We need to know all of those things up front first, and make sure that it's satisfactory in the home or the work. I say remote workplace, that it meets basically all the criteria that they have in that they would have had in
this. How about, like, I know that because I have an office in my home, this is my office here. Our insurance knows that how much is part of our house is the office and all that craziness. Do they have to do that with your stuff? Because they now have a police agency or, you know, whatever you are, they have that in their home now as an office. Mm-hmm. And if they lose something and their house burns down or whatever, somebody's going to pay for that. So,
well, you just stopped remote dispatching, Doug.
Yeah. Right. No, those are good questions too and observations. But yes, we had to vet that prior to pushing the or deploying the equipment as well. And that was, we had to go through our legal folks, one, to make sure that the equipment was covered, you know, at home. What happens? Mm-hmm. What happens if they get hurt while they're working? Is workman's comp cover them? You know, all of those questions had to be vetted and asked. And we had to make sure that we were all on the same page and understand what happened. So that really a quick down and dirty to answer your question, unless the equipment was intentionally damaged, the city covers it 100%.
Oh,
it's
really?
Just an extension of the workplace. So that's how they look at it. Yeah.
All right. Wow.
Nice.
I think I'm old school thinking. I think I'm thinking like.
You are. Like, this is why that has never happened before.
Because I get so many requests to do classes about, you know, bullying in comm centers and all this stuff. And I'm like, How does that even work at this point? Because there's nobody in the comm center. I mean, if you're a supervisor, how do you even know, like, somebody's not, unless you're listening to their calls the whole time? I mean, how do you know they're performing to standards or whatever?
And I'll answer that, but I'll flip the script and say, how do we know that they're okay if they just took a real serious call? You know, maybe it was an infant stop breathing or whatever. Yeah. What if they took a very serious call? How do we know they're okay once they hang the phone up?
That's
right?
Another thing I had written down here saying, how do you address that? Do they tell you or?
So really at this point, again, that's been a huge discussion. Now, obviously we've brought on a clinician, a full-time clinician on our staff, or actually part-time right now, getting ready to bring on a full-time clinician, but that doesn't help the person that's at home that may have taken that bad call or had a, you know, another issue or whatever. How do we make sure they're okay? How do we make sure they're performing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right now the supervisor is supposed to check on them. I want to say, and if I have my notes here, about every 15 minutes, if they've handled the call, they haven't, they would check on them like every 15 minutes after a call. So it's kind of, and I don't want to speak out of turn because Danny that you mentioned and those folks, they are actually revising that to make sure that we have something in place to make sure that we're checking on our folks, right?
Yeah.
You know, on a regular rotation, a regular basis. So that was a pretty high priority too. So you bring up a very good question, and we try to tell everybody that's something you need to think about. So
remember, there's telehealth for your clinicians too. They can do a debrief over like Zoom.
Yes.
So, we've seen that happen more and more here in California. I have a friend who is a clinician and she has her own company, and I had referred an employee to her and she says, do they do telehealth? I'm like, what in the world is that? And she was explaining it to me, and that just opened up an entire new world.
Right. Yes. Yep. And we have a nurse triage line that we use anyway, which is kind of like telehealth too. Same thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
It's such an interesting topic with so many other questions as well, Doug. I know we could just keep bombarding me with more and more questions.
I just keep writing notes.
Yeah.
I know.
The question that I think I want to hear is, when I'm taking notes of everything you said about SOPs and writing some things down to consider at my own agency, and I hear you're doing, you know, CAD and non-emergency in the phones, and you had some cloud-based stuff. Is there anything that you would mention to people listening that's utilized over the web that maybe 911 centers have access to that is an absolute must to make this program successful besides CAD, radio, and phone?
So I think one of the biggest obstacles that we had early on, and we had it kind of intermittently until we got it resolved, was our audio recordings. Okay. So when we first started, we didn't have it.
Okay.
Again, we had to vet that through our city attorney to say, hey, look, we've got people taking 911 calls at home, but there's no audio. It's not recording until we can figure this out. You know, that was with our recording vendor and the phone folks. So, but we finally got that fixed. But as we added new equipment, and I think this is one of the things, if you add new technology or new equipment to your already existing program, you need it. And I'm sure everybody does it, but there's always things that we missed about doing, you know, trying to do our homework to make sure we've covered every base. And for example, I will say that we had folks working at home and they lost power at home. Well, obviously, they so what do we do to keep them up and running? What we did was we went out and bought UPSs, right? So just obviously the more the UPS lasts, the heavier it is. So you got to be careful with the equipment that you're pushing out to your folks. So we got one that lasts just about 45 minutes to an hour. For each piece of equipment, it goes with it, just like a MiFi Wi-Fi would go with it.
So it doesn't do their house. That. It doesn't do
their refrigerator. No, it just does the equipment.
Right.
Forget the air conditioner.
And it did happen. So we had a person call and say, hey, I'm out of the tree fell or something happened in the neighborhood. They lost power. So now we're down staffing, right? Because they counted as staffing, and now we didn't have that person. Wow. But it came up eventually. And, you know, we had, again, that's where other things, with one thing, it's kind of the domino effect. And then it brings questions up about other things. Okay, we lost this person. Do we have her drive all the way in here? Or do we wait and chance it and see how long is it going to take for that power to come on? Because you guys know, I'm sure in California, just like here in the NCR, the traffic is gridlocked pretty much every day, all day. So these folks really like staying home if they don't have to come in. And, you know, it's obviously easier, but so the UPS, I will say we did a lot of research and we were able to get these UPSs. So for each position, there's a UPS that goes with it.
One last question, Doug. I know we're out of time. But I want one more question.
This is it. 45-minute podcast.
Yeah. So many things going through my mind about the interpersonal relationships. You don't have anymore. You're done.
Yeah.
There is no camaraderie. There is no like part of our team. It's you're this thing over there. You're a end of a tentacle out there. I don't know.
There's also no gossip and no.
Yeah. No, I mean, how do you talk conflict. About people? And,
Do you have certain dates and times where it's just not allowed? Because we talked about a tree falling on a house. Sometimes we get advance notice of weather and sometimes we don't. So say you got somebody scheduled for home, you know that there's a potential for severe weather. Do you just cancel it and tell them you got to come to the station or do you have times where it's just not allowed?
No, actually we actually tell them to stay home, like for a snowstorm, or we don't want them driving in the snow if we don't have to. And that depends. That's really kind of a case by case basis, depending on what that would be. So that's probably the bigger, we have to make a decision, you know, hey, look, you know, obviously we, you know, in our city, Old Town Alexandria floods, you know, and it causes traffic issues and things like that. So, you know, if we're anticipating stuff like that, we'll actually up staff and we'll give them the option. They can either come in physically, they can come in, or if they have the remote equipment at home, they can just simply log in at home. So we try to give them that flexibility.
Wow.
Of what they can do. So, yeah.
And do you have a certain percentage of staff that must be in the building? And I promise this is the last. We're way over on time.
You know, nine-parter.
Certain percentage of staff that have to be in the building.
So, yes, we do. We do require the supervisor to be on staff, and we require the radio dispatchers. We have to have backups to those ones that are out in the field working. for several reasons. One, if there's obviously bigger incidents or, you know, that require multiple channels, but at the same time, if there's an issue while they're out dispatching, it's a little different than call taking. If there's an issue, they have an instant backup sitting there listening to the radio that can take immediately take over.
Those are
some of the things.
That's pretty incredible.
Don't wrap this episode up since I'm so far over on time. Wrap it up. Wow.
My head's exploding with this thing.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if you want to listen to this episode, take some extra time and it'll be on all the social media platforms and all the podcast platforms. Doug, thanks for joining us. Thanks for having Danny come on and join us as well and talking about this work from home remotely, a 911 topic. You're going to be listened to all around the nation. I'm sure we'll have you back for following up on how this is
part three and four.
Thanks, everybody. We're on to another episode of We Speak Dispatch.
Bye, guys.
Hi, this is Amanda Schwartz with Zybex, and you've been listening to another great episode of We Speak Dispatch.